episode 133 Rebel City Podcast. Nice early Sunday. Well, I say nice, like, I personally object to being out of bed before lunchtime on a Sunday, so fuck the two of you for that. Bye. So nice to be back.
This is the saviour.
Like, I know. We're all neck deep in coffee at this point. It's fucking 11 o'clock. It really shouldn't be that bad. But hey, here we are. It's good to see you, mate. How's it? How's things?
Managed to stay consistent, which is good. This will be like the most consistent I think we've been in.
We said 2 weeks on the last one, and we're pretty much bang on 2 weeks, so mm-hmm. we're definitely getting there, which is a bonus. I think probably best that it was 2 weeks this time round. As anybody who's followed me on Twitter, I've been like neck deep in nicotine withdrawal this week and have not been the world's most pleasant of people. Like, it has really been. I've been on the vape, which is interesting. I think that kind of stuff has come on leaps and bounds for the last time I tried it, because any time I've tried them in the past, it's just always reminded me that I'm no smoking. Whereas, like, this time it does feel a bit better, but I think in those first couple of days, because I've been, like, tapering off with the tobacco and ramping up with the vape, so there was a period of time where I had the two, and then obviously last week I was like, right now, let's go, sort of thing. And I wasn't really using the vape the first couple of days the way I should have, and I woke up on Monday morning at 4 o'clock in the morning, and that was me until 2 o'clock on mm-hmm. Tuesday morning. On Tuesday, obviously fucking exhausted, had a great night's sleep. And then on Wednesday, I was like fucking peaks and troughs all week, where I had one night where I just couldn't get the heat done at all, and one night where I was completely zonked. Mm-hmm. Fun and games. Right. But I do feel better for it, and as I say, the vape has been helpful. You know what I mean? It's the wee plastic guys, I get, they're like
Elf Bar.
An environmental disaster waiting to happen, and I do feel guilty, you know, but at the same time, it's better than the alternative right now for me, so, you know, absolutely. Make use of it in the short term.
I think, first of all, Dave's on a camera. Get a camera on Dave. Camera. So people get to see Dave.
Hello.
You probably end up, I don't know, getting stalkers or something. Definitely the best looking guy in the room, but...
Absolutely not.
I think nicotine withdrawals something that people don't talk about a lot.
So this was the conversation I kind of had with Stace during the week, because she's been on the vape. She's been almost like a kind of vape hobbyist. She's had all the different kits and, you know, the mega wattages and the big fucking, there's one I basically refer to it as the smoke machine, because when she uses it, it's basically like a dry ice machine, so it is. But, so she's been on them for ages, and obviously has been really useful for me this week to be like, when you were going through this, what was it, you know, this and that and blah, blah, blah. I did kind of have a moment where I was like, I've had multiple issues with like addiction over the years, whether it be drink, whether it be drugs, you know, various other bits and bobs. Like, I mean,
the drink, the drugs, and the scratch kills.
Aye, that's what it gets you. But we end joke there. I forgot where I was there.
You were saying that you've had
but this one is like so mundane, so everyday, that I don't think that even I, and now I've went through nicotine withdrawal before. A couple of years ago I did it cold turkey and was 8 months clear of it, and I just get fucking bored. It turned out that when I'm no smoking and I'm in work, I need to actually like talk to people in staff rooms and stuff like that, and I really don't want to have to do that. Mm-hmm. So eventually I was just like, the only way to escape is to go outside and smoke, so I don't have to talk to any of these people. And that kind of won out. So obviously this time, I think that the vape will hopefully, you know, cover that side of things. But it's brutal. Last time I had bleeding gums, nosebleeds, as all the stuff that you've smoked, all the skin and flesh that you've essentially smoked like salmon heals, it gets grim, and I've still to go through all that this time round, you know what I mean? Like, but I knew what I was getting into, I knew that it was rough, and even I was like, fuck man, I'm surprised how rough this is. And I'm like, how did I forget this? Because the smoking is so pervasive, it's so like every day, it's so, you know, you get dressed, have your coffee, smoke a fag as you wait for the bus, like smoke a fag as you head into the office, or you go out for lunch or whatever it is. Like, it becomes so ordinary that I don't think that you do qualify it in the same terms as you would other addictions. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, and I found myself going, oof, I'm surprised how rough this is, even though I've done this before. Like, uh-huh. I should have been going in completely with my eyes wide open and still managed to be pretty much a total mess this week. Are you know what I mean?
Are you dropping down like nicotine like levels or something? Like,
so I think that was the big issue, was that I've went through smoking unfiltered rolling tobacco, which, I mean, I'd be as well just sat outside with my fucking gums ruin a fucking exhaust pipe. You know what I mean? Like, to like, I 0.2 milligrams or whatever it is that are in these Elf bars. So as much as I was like, oh, I'm using the vape, the drop off was not like anticipated or handled particularly well. So I, there's been quite a few, moments on Twitter where I was actually like screaming into the void almost. So if you reached out, and a number of people did, to say, keep going, mate, and like, good on you and whatever else, thank you. It actually did like genuinely help. You know what I mean? Like,
good on you, man.
If you ever had a period, because you're a smoker as well, but have you ever had a period off and tried to go through the withdrawal?
Yeah, last year I stopped. In fact, I've stopped like the past couple of years. I've actually had like pretty good goes at it. I actually, 2 years ago and a bit of last year, I'd used some of the you can go through a course of, what's it called? It's like a pill that you take daily.
Yeah. And it basically gives you an aversion to it.
Well, it does.
You're talking about the Champex or something like that?
So I tried Champex. Now it's off the market, right? And it's off of the market for a very strange reason. It was on the market for many years, and my mum and partner both stopped because of it. And like, it can be varying, like a month, sometimes 6 weeks. Paul's partner took 2 weeks, right? Mm-hmm. And what it does is it essentially like shuts off that bit of your brain. Yeah. It's weird. You can still smoke on it, right? So mm-hmm. like they say, like, just smoke for the next 2 weeks or whatever, but taking it. But very quickly I was like, you just don't, it's weird. It's like you've never smoked before. It's right. Like, you're just like, I'm not really getting anything from this. It's like, it just shuts off that nicotine bit. It's very bizarre, right? The reason, like, obviously there was a lot of talk when it came out, because people were going like having mad dreams, people were like, there was suicides on it, and like, it can really fuck up your moods and shit like that, right. So that's like, they talk about that, and they when you're going through the pharmacy and stuff, they check in on you every week and then every 2 weeks and stuff like that, and they're quite conscious of it. Mm-hmm. And that's not even the reason why it was taken off the market. Bizarrely, it was taken off the market last year because I went to go on another course of it, because I was like, this will definitely work for me.
Yeah.
The reason it didn't work for me the first time around, I think, was my partner at the time, really. Like, mm-hmm. sort of made it a bit like, just, it was just not quite the right scenario to get it through. And I went back and they were like, it's off the market. And I was like, how come? Turns out they discovered that there was something in it that was a bit carcinogenic. And I was like,
fuck.
Is there not a bit irony of that, though? Like, right, okay, so this thing that are really effective at getting people off cigarettes
also gives you cancer.
Also toxic.
But how cancerous is it? Like, because surely, like, all right, okay, I'll take the thing for 2 weeks that's maybe a little bit carcinogenic.
Yeah.
It's then going to fucking
get you off it long term.
Get off you long term. So I thought it was a bit strange, but yeah, I have tried that. I've got patches
make me ill. So I did the patches one time, and honest to God, I went along to the chemist, picked them up. They were like, here's your first week, to come back in another week and blah, blah, blah. And they were like, how much do you smoke? They did the whole profile me and everything. And I was like, right, cool. And they're like, this is the dose for you. And I was like, nay bother. And I went home, put the patch on. I think I must have lasted about 45 minutes on it, where I was like phone sweats, like heart palpitations and everything. I just could not deal with it whatsoever.
I found that they worked all right for me, patches, for a while, because you just need to make sure you don't fall asleep with them for a start, right? Because like, you get pure mad dreams and stuff like that.
But, right, yeah, do you? Yeah. Like, if you fall asleep with them on?
I never kept mine on long enough.
I found that like, I woke up one morning and I was like, what the hell was that? Like pure, like, crazy dreams, like mm-hmm. waking up in the night, and then I was like, I got this fucking patches on me in the shower, and I'm like, oh Jesus. So like, there's little like routines with it, and obviously I reduced the nicotine quite quick in the patches as well. The thing that really screwed me up was they gave me the chewing gum, and I was like, one day I was raging at work, and was just like, right, I'll try a bit of chewing gum, and like, it like makes your mouth numb, and then like, I started like being like, I'm gonna throw up, like, this is like, it was so intense, and I was just like,
that's what I was like,
I was just like, it felt like my whole mouth was just like all over the place. I was like, what the hell is that all about?
Yeah.
And they've given me lozenges as well. And I was like, they seem even more disgusting.
Yeah. No.
Fuck that.
But then, as you say, it's like, I was raging at work and I went out for a smoke. And like, that's something that I think is different for me this time, is that a lot of the work I've done on myself over the years has put me to a place where I'm like, I actually feel ready for it now. Like, I'm no ducking out of work being like, I'm so fucking raging that I need to go and smoke it in like anymore. Like, but there definitely was times where I was like, so I think that's part of it now, where when I was talking to folk on Twitter, I was like, no, I'm definitely done with this time. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, and I know that, whereas I've done it in the past and always in the back of my head being like, I know I'm not done here. You know what I mean? Whereas I don't think that this time. So hopefully we can keep that up.
Do you know what? I've never been a full-time smoker.
Mm-hmm.
The only sort of full-time smoking that I've ever done
is not tobacco.
It's tobacco and joints.
Yeah.
And then I took the tobacco out of that, you know? And I remember thinking, I'm going through weed withdrawals. And when I got, it was like night sweats, mm-hmm. terrifying dreams, like feeling sick, feeling dizzy, sore heads. And when I Googled it, it was like, this is tobacco withdrawal.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy shit. But I'll tell you the one thing that really, like, I get that, you know, these elf bars, other than the environmental issue, they're kind of, like, vaping's kind of an unknown entity, really, as far as, like,
yeah.
long term, like, so 20 years plus the effects that it has on you. But see, if you know that you talk to people and you know, you can listen to your body, and there's like an intuitive system inside your body that tells you what's good and bad for you.
Mm-hmm.
See, when I go out for a night out and I smoke like 3 or 4 cigarettes, I feel like fucking death the next day. See, if I have an elf bar, I mean, I feel kind of wheezy, I feel like my breathing's a bit labored, but I don't feel anywhere near as fucking bad. And it's kind of like where they talk about, like, if you want to find out what's bad for you in your diet, come off everything for 90 days and then start to reintroduce it, and you'll feel it in your body. See, whenever I have a cigarette now, there's something in my body's just like, get that to fuck, man. Aye. Like, there's like an internal warning system. It just goes fucking beep, beep. You know
it's,
what I mean?
It's interesting because they are now looking at like nicotine for like so many other things though, like in different ways. Like, nicotine can be really beneficial, but it's also so
addictive. Apparently it's a great fertilizer. It's probably not a good reason to put it in your body, you know what I mean?
No,
like,
absolutely not. But yeah, no, it's one you want to get rid of.
Aye, man. I mean, like, if you look at the way that traditionally, even in like the sort of tribal times, they used to like use nicotine as a medicine.
Exactly.
But they were chewing on nicotine leaves.
Yeah.
They were only smoking tar.
It's the way we're taking it in that's really screwing everything.
Aye, they're no smoking fucking tar and whatever other piss that they put in.
Formaldehyde and all sorts of shit they put in them. But anyway, that's been my week since, you know, we last caught up, and definitely feel the benefit now. But as you say, it is one of those like addictive things that kind of does go under the radar. And it's even to the point where, having been through this already, I was still like, the fuck is going on here? And you're like, I forgot all this. You know what I mean? The minute I started smoking again, I made a choice to be like, no, brain doesn't need that, go away. You know what I mean? Like, pure cognitive dissonance with it, you know what I mean? But aye, you know, hopefully, as I say, this time it does feel as though it's the one that's going to take.
No.
But aye, moving on to other things, like, obviously there's been a few mental ones this week. The one I want to start with is fucking everybody's least favourite, you know, health secretary, Matt Hancock. This guy is honestly one of the dumbest fucks I've ever come across in my life. Like, he obviously, you know, fucked it during the pandemic, and then, you know, went after I'm a Celebrity to like try and, you know, rejuvenate his image with the public, which seems to have worked because the general public are also fucking idiots and, you know, have the memory of goldfish. But he also released a book, and I don't know if you've seen any of this.
No.
Like, he wrote a book called The Pandemic Diaries, and he wrote it in conjunction with a ghostwriter, a woman called, I think it's Isabel Oakenshot, her name is. Now, she is the girlfriend stroke partner of the guy who's the head of the Brexit party, and she is a rabid, like, anti-lockdown campaigner throughout the pandemic.
Okay.
So the notion that the health secretary during the pandemic would be working with an anti-lockdown campaigner after the pandemic to release a book about their experiences during the pandemic should, for me, have raised alarm bells straight away.
Uh-huh.
Like, why is this the person? You know what I mean? Like, it's all they all know each other, they're all pals in the background type of thing, right? But this woman has also ghostwritten, as well as a long career in journalism, like, she ghostwrote with Aaron Banks of Vote Leave.
Yeah.
About how they got Brexit done, basically. You know what I mean? Like, but on the outside of that, once that was done, she then took all the information that he had provided her as research and then put it out in the public domain and actually, like, breached non-disclosure agreements with him and stuff like that to say this information was basically in the public interest. And what she was doing was getting her scoop as a journalist before this book hit the shelves.
Right, okay.
You know what I mean? Like, and then, you know, she's basically double dipping. She's getting the story as a journalist, and then she's getting her cut when the books sell. You know what I mean? Like, but she essentially knifed this guy in the back, you know.
Couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
No, obviously not. So then Hancock gets into bed with her, writes the book, they're all thumbs up, being all pally-wally and all the rest of it. And then she took 100,000 WhatsApp messages that he'd sent her of his communications during the pandemic with Boris Johnson, like everybody in the cabinet, everybody at the head of the civil service, you know, everybody, teachers' unions go to it, nursing unions get it. The conversations these guys had were exactly the conversations you expected the Tories to be having during the pandemic, where they were like jokingly threatening about, oh, this Brexit policy is no going well. Why don't we just release a new variant of COVID to shut everybody up? You know what I mean? And now, obviously, that's not what they were doing, but that these are the jokes and the conversations they were having, where we'll just invent a new variant to, like, move the story on. Like, some of this shit that happened was absolutely brutal. This woman has then went out and basically handed these text messages to the Telegraph and again breached a non-disclosure agreement with Matt Hancock to basically put all the government's dirty laundry out. And the Telegraph have been running story after story after story for about a week now. And one just gets worse than the other. To the point where Hancock's like, I'm suing you. Like, you breached our agreement. And she's like, well, this information's in the public interest. It's the exact same thing she did with Aaron Banks. So the fact that she'd already done that she was an anti-lockdown campaigner, that, you know, her husband or whatever is head of the Brexit party, like, everything about this woman should have been a red flag to this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't. He still managed to make an absolute cunt here. But now she's out there being like, see, if you don't stop threatening me with lawyers, I'll release the nuclear information. So she's actually out in the press, like, threatening members of the government, be like, see, if you don't back off me, like, I've got worse that I'll release.
But surely that's in the public interest as much as...
It's not about the public interest.
She should be releasing it all. Like, I want to see the nuclear stuff.
Right? What nuclear stuff is she talking about?
Well, this is the thing. How much when you've seen what's already out there, if she's saying that there's more to come that is nuclear, then it's anybody's guess. You know what I mean? Like, there will, I imagine, have been conversations about all the Partygate stuff and all that kind of carry on that was going on, because these are private conversations between colleagues, the same way we would have a chat. You know,
I think first of all, the fact that I sort of skimmed over it, but I looked at some of the screenshots of these text messages. I was like, well, why has a government got a fucking WhatsApp group?
Because it's encrypted. Is that they want WhatsApp and these guys to weaken the encryption so that they can, for national security, see what people are sending. But they also use it themselves because nobody can break the encryption.
I know, and I understand that Facebook says that, you know, WhatsApp's encrypted end to end, and you're like, right, is it actually? But, you know, like...
No, it legit is.
Stories about, you know, when the President of the United States has got the President's BlackBerry and isn't allowed an iPhone and isn't allowed this and isn't allowed that. And these cunts are jumping about like a fucking football group chat, like, and also like making jokes about national security, making jokes about lockdown that impacted mental, physical health, like, and making like the
stuff,
see,
like,
see
they
the tone.
Made decisions about masks in schools, not because, and they've got Chris Whitty, the, you know, chief health officer or whatever his title is, being like, well, there's no evidence for or against masks in schools. And Hancock's in the group chat again, well, Sturgeon's doing it in Scotland, so we're just going to need to do it. And really, like, for this Oakenshot's point of view, who, again, was against the lockdowns and whatever else, there's a lot of cherry picking going on that shows that a lot of these decisions that were made during the pandemic were political decisions and not health decisions. Like the health officer is saying, there is currently no evidence one way or another that this is an effective course of action. And Hancock's going, well, politically, we can't be outflanked.
Bad if we don't dare.
We can't be outflanked by Scotland. You know what I mean? Like, uh-huh. So this is, they're using again to push this agenda that none of this was necessary and it was all a big scam and blah, blah, blah. And I...
The whole, what was it? There was a bit where it was Priti Patel was like, yes, law and order. Did you see that?
I don't think
that
I did.
Message, there was like a bit about somebody getting arrested. Was it the guy getting arrested? I don't know if this is true, but I think...
somebody got a £5,000 fine and they were all joking about it and Johnson was in the chat as well, uh-huh. Getting it pure ha-ha and
but
all that.
She
kind
was
of stuff.
Like, yes, law and order. And it's like, mate, see that chat where it's like, we're into like, you know, like law and order. You're like, that is total fucking like fascism and like right-wing fucking... Aye. Like, these people are fucking warped, man. And it's just the fact that like we're starting to see
actually
it.
Celebrating that an ordinary person got a £5,000 fine, uh-huh. While they were all sitting swallowing.
These are people who are in charge of a multi-trillion pound economy and they're sitting laughing about a £5,000 fine, like a normal person getting a £5,000 fine. It's like, I think like we've spoke about this many times on this podcast, but we need to stop thinking that these people are somehow above. Like, they are the same as... we're all the same. Like, aye. We're human beings. And no matter how well they speak, no matter how well they dress, no matter the fucking power stance that they get off of their fucking, you know, whatever it is, these people are fucking flawed. Aye. And I think that there needs to be some sort of, like, fucking psychoanalysis of this fucking government to go... I mean, we've done it plenty with, like, you know, other governments, but aye. We need to actually sit down and look at these people and go...
need to be more driven into the sea, to be honest with you, than anything else at this point, because I think the text messages, as much as it is our story because it happened, and there are things we go, oh, they were teachers' unions, or they just don't want to work. They want lockdowns because they just don't want to work. Was the chat, and you're like, these people were... protecting children during a global pandemic or doing their best to try and protect children during the global pandemic, and you're coming at them like work shy skivers. And but then none of it's a surprise. Like, we know, like, through their policy, through their rhetoric over the course of the last 12 years and beyond, you know, all through austerity and all that other shite, that this is exactly what they think of people. Like, and it is a story that they get caught in it, right? Fair enough. But see the actual content of the conversations. Like, it's not that they're innocuous, it's that I'm no surprised in the slightest by anything that was said, because I already think that that's how they think. And like, getting confirmation to me wasn't really already that it's much of a surprise, because nothing surprises me about the many male. You know what I mean? Like,
it's not a surprise at all. Like, and that's the sad thing about it. I mean, even their most recent like asylum seeking like policies that have been obviously heavily, heavily questioned because they're both aye. Unworkable and
by the people's champion Gary Lineker, like fucking Gary Lineker for PM, by the way. Like,
we'll talk about that in a second. What is the actual policy? Like, I don't even know anymore. Like, what I mean, are we still putting people planning on putting people in planes to Rwanda? Like, what's the fucking so immigration policy?
This most recent one that seems to have triggered a lot of the, you know, Lineker carry on was the Rwanda policy back on the table. So they initially said, we're going to spend £120 million sending people to Rwanda so that they don't come here. And then that all went through the court systems and was put on hold and nobody went anywhere. I think they're still paying Rwanda for whatever reason. Then the courts came back and said, no, right, look, this is legal. Like, other places like Australia and other yada yada, there's precedent that other countries have got similar policies. It's no... And this guy's, it's doable. You know what I mean? So they've republished the bill. And it basically says that if you are coming to the UK seeking asylum, that you will either be sent back to your own country. And this is the bit that's the kicker for me. If we're not able to send you back to your own country, we will then send you to Rwanda. Now, the fact that they cannot send that person back to their own country means that their claim for asylum is entirely valid. Because if it's not safe to send that person back to where they came from, then how is their claim for asylum or refuge not valid? Because right. You yourself are saying it's not safe to send them back there. so we'll send them to Rwanda instead. Right. You're like, it's fucking crazy.
So is Rwanda like a sort of waiting room to find out whether or no you're claiming for asylum?
Well,
in
as
the
I
UK?
Say, the general chat seems to be that there's going to be, it's like labour exchange stuff. It's essentially like, you know, they're going to be put to work for whatever it is, the Rwandan economy. But I don't know. Like the bill was published again, and there's an actual disclaimer in it. And this is what all the furore like, about me, like, confused me this week. You guys, like, cleverly on the news going, no, we think this is legal. Braverman herself is like, my army of lawyers think this is legal. And you're like, what do you mean think? Like, you're the UK Home fucking Secretary. What do you mean you think this is legal? They've got a disclaimer in it going, this probably doesn't actually meet the European Convention of Human Rights. So in the actual bill itself, there is like a paragraph that's like, we actually don't think this is legal, but we're going to do it anyway. And then they're going, oh no, this is perfectly legal. And you're like, your own bill acknowledges that it's not. Like, what are we even doing here? You know what I mean? Like, so when
it's a big difference between legal and moral as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, yeah, Gary Lineker goes, well, you know, these policies are very much akin to the 1930s. And we've seen it, we've said this before, where, you know, the Nazis did actually have a plan at one point before the Final Solution ramped up to take European Jews and move them to Madagascar in Africa. You know what I mean? Like, so it is literally a Nazi policy. Uh-huh. It is literally a copy and paste Nazi policy. So if you want to be compared to Nazis, maybe no copy their, you know, their playbook, you know what I mean, literally. So for him to be like, this is a bit akin to the 30s, is an entirely fucking valid comment, because
I think so too.
They tried it in the 30s, uh-huh. You know what I mean? Like, so, yeah. So they then be that, like, oh, you don't have an opinion.
This is, aye, that's, I mean, this is something that gets used, and I think that it's a symptom of hindsight, is that, you know, when people go, like, for instance, when Trump was getting elected and people were like, this is like Nazi Germany in the 30s.
Aye.
People think, when you say that, people think about the Holocaust.
Yep.
That's what people jump to, and they go, how dare you compare that to this? And you're like, I understand that, right? Because, aye, you know, absolutely, right?
There's a lot of shit they were on before that.
But where did it start? Yep. How did they get going? And what was it that they used? And it is, like you just said, it is play by play. It is the exact same. Yep. You know what I mean? And like, seen a poster that was up that said, yes, we're not shooting people in the streets, but 3 million people have died due to austerity.
Yep.
It's like, they're like smiling assassins. You know what I mean?
The Untermenschen.
What's that?
The underclass.
Uh-huh. That's it. It is literally like some sort of form of, let's get, you know, like population culling, and let's just get rid of the people that they don't like, and blah, blah, blah. If you really, I mean, whether or no they sit down and they sort of go, we're going to do this, and this amount of people are going to die, and let's do it. And like, they're like, I don't know about that. I genuinely don't know,
the pandemic, the conversations, particularly for these text messages that Hancock was involved in, you know, the conversations around, what's the thing? Herd immunity. There was a number of conversations around herd immunity, and questions about Boris Johnson asking what are the, you know, the likelihoods of people dying. And one of the funniest aspects of that was that Boris Johnson doesn't understand how to count, because he gets percentages and probabilities mixed up. So like, Chris Whitty has to actually step in and explain like secondary school maths to him on one of these texts. No joke. Like, look it up, man. Like, has to actually explain like high school mathematics to the fucking sitting prime minister during a pandemic. You know what I mean? Like, so they're in a higher echelon of being, you know what I mean? Like, uh-huh. But
they would like you to think that they are.
They would.
I think we need to,
I think, like, they think they are.
I mean,
you know what I mean?
Aye. I think that, well, and we'll go on to, I suppose, some of the reaction to the Gary Lineker stuff, where we're sort of backing up the sort of sentiment of what he's saying. We need to really have a look at how we've managed to elect these clowns, like, across the board. You know what I mean?
We didn't elect
Well, no in Scotland anyway.
Yeah, but I'm talking more of like the royal we, you know, like, I'm talking about America with Trump as well.
Yeah.
I'm talking about like here with Boris. Like, we need to figure out. And unfortunately, I mean, it's just, it actually melts my fucking brain. Like, I can feel my fucking brain melting out my ears when I try and think about how did they convince people to vote for this guy?
Fear.
And
it's always fear.
It is,
yeah.
In my opinion, it's always fear.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's always, whether they're using a pandemic and they're using health as a fear, or whether they're using austerity in itself, they've manufactured a cost of living crisis, which is like crippling families,
yeah.
which has a no reason.
Yeah, it does not need to happen.
It's not like we're sitting here thinking, feeling like it's everyone. It's not everyone. It's just Britain. Like, it's not, like, it we're not in a worldwide austerity crisis right now.
Can I get
just
a fucking...
Britain, but we're still having...
Can I buy a tomato? Can I buy two cucumbers together? You got to buy one at a time. Can I buy like any more than whatever it is? Fucking three totties. You know what I mean? Like that
no,
type of shit is not happening elsewhere. You know
there's
what I
no
mean?
Eggs in the shops right now. No, nothing like that. Like,
I think things like avian flu might be playing a part in that one. But...
Aye, but that's all to do with like lack of trade, to do with Europe and everything else. This is a long play. I mean, this goes back to Brexit, really. Like the whole thing. Brexit was based on fear. These new policies are based on fear.
Yep.
There'll be Brexiteers and people like Farage that are celebrating these policies, which,
oh,
is,
big
which
time.
Is so sad. But then I work in a job where I speak to lots of different working sectors, and I know how much they're struggling. They're struggling with getting staff in the door, mm-hmm. getting people in. So we've got a lack of skilled workers and unskilled workers in this country because our youth generations are not willing to pick up that slack.
No.
They are not willing to go out and pick fruit and
for less than minimum wage and all that kind of
no,
of course
no, it
not.
Is minimum wage. Of course they're going to get minimum wage. We have a law that says that they're going to get paid minimum wage,
mm-hmm.
but so it's not that they're not getting paid minimum wage, it's just that they're not willing to get up at 5 a.m. to go and do a job that other people
how
are.
Can how can you have this is the other thing on that, like you're saying they probably will be getting paid minimum wage, but minimum wage isn't enough. Like
it's not a livable wage.
How do we have a statistic and a you know a science behind going, here's how much you need to pay people so that they can live, and then have a fucking minimum wage less than that. So basically they're like, we want you not to be able to live a life. Like we want you to be crippled and like you're saying,
it is ideological.
Living in fear. Go to your work. Don't push back against that. They literally want fucking drones.
Yep.
And that is what they want for people. And there's a younger generation now who have grew up with internet that are like, fuck that. I am not doing it. Like there's TikToks of people that do half a day in Starbucks, like young people, and they're like walking out like that, fuck you, to the manager. And it's because they're like, I am not willing. Like I know, because we now live in this global society that I'm worth way more than that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? No, there is a sort
false,
of like
false perception of worth though. Like it's
100%.
It's a made up. Almost Andrew Tateism or one of these other people that tries to put out this facade of importance. It's like live the way that you want to live before mm-hmm. you get there, sort of thing. And it's false. Like none of those people have just done that and ended up that way, unless they've had a huge entitlement fund from
some sort of backing
or something like that, you know. Yeah. So, like, people are just living a...
You're right. Aye, there is a sort of... there is a fallacy on the internet now that we can all become millionaires.
Yeah.
Aye,
if you work hard enough.
Yeah.
If you work hard enough, apply yourself, you'll be a good millionaire.
See, yeah. And see, when you marry that with this absolute dog shit faux spirituality that's kicking about, where you can manifest your dreams and it comes with this thing, right? And
started with the secret.
Becomes with like a karmic sort of thing that people get drawn into. It's like multifaceted, but one of the two most toxic here is if you don't succeed, you've not worked hard enough.
Yeah.
And also if you don't succeed, you've done something wrong.
Yeah.
Like this idea that the universe, you're in this blah 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 with the universe, and when you do something wrong, something bad will come back onto you.
Like a simple formula.
And it's bullshit.
It doesn't.
We're basically big like time. Animals and ants in an ant farm, and it's
complete
like
chaos and potluck.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So and all of these people, like you could pick any of them that we have totally pedestaled, you know, particularly you know our demographic, feel like Musk to Jobs. Don't know really much about Andrew Tate's background, but Jordan Peterson, like these guys that are now being like, oh, look, these guys know the secret, right? It's different from the secret, as in like the book, the manifesto, but these guys know and they're out there and they're making these like, we blah, blah, blah. Every single one of them came for privilege. Like Elon Musk has this sort of like, you know, he wants to talk down this idea that his granddad owned a fucking jewel mine in South Africa. He does not want people to know that. They don't want you to know that because then it breaks down.
It destroys the narrative that they are self-made, that you can be like them, that this is there for everybody. Like, it's not. It never has been. It never will be. You know what I mean?
Do you know what the
same as the government that we're talking about, where, you know, that notion of hard work and, you know,
pull yourself up,
aspirational nonsense that we're talking about. It's been weaponized against us on multiple fronts. It's the government. It's, you know, social media. It's the contentification of like life. Like this whole idea that, you know, you're and so interested in that every part of your life needs to be documented. And there are people out there who are interested at the point where all their lives should be documented. But it can't be everybody.
I think even I agree with you. I was going to say something earlier, but it's went just on that sort of point. It's important to realise that even these people who we think their life's interesting enough to be documented constantly are not what they say that they are. There are very few of these people that are actually being genuine, even though every single one of them will talk about being authentic. And
it's all a facade. It's all a facade from like, and whether the narrative that they put out, it's all edited and given a spin, and it has a certain take.
Yeah.
Like, that's just going to be the way that it works. But the saddest thing about the whole thing is that they're promoting that being a millionaire is going to make you happy as well. This is like an age-old problem. And then, but then you get other people, like you get your Russell Brands and people like that who are trying to be a
what the fuck's happened to him, by the way? What has happened to him?
We can talk about him in a wee second.
We'll talk about, yeah, but these guys that are going down that spiritual route of like, oh yeah, like the thing that annoys me about them is that they're these guys that are waking up in a penthouse in London. They've got a 25,000 pound ice bath outside. They've got a production crew to get them ready.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, this is what you need to do to like be like centered. And it's like, dude, most people are like fucking struggling to get 10 minutes with their fucking family in the evenings because they're working two jobs and they're worried that the price of beans is now £1.25.
Yes.
Like, what the hell's going on?
That's all the, like, my morning routine for Zen. And you're like, dude, there's days where I see if I'm working for him, I'm lucky if I even fucking wash before I log in. You know what I mean? When I just roll out of bed and turn the laptop on, I'm like, right, let's do this. You know what I mean?
Like, and like, Paul, you obviously like understand therapy, but you also understand the fact that like, as important as therapy is, not everyone has the time or money for a therapist.
No,
you know,
no.
Like, as much as key as it is to like people's mental health, it's like, yeah, but it's still not really like funded by the government.
Yeah,
the government will do a whole shed of other stuff, but they won't like really help with proper therapy.
Yeah. So, and I also recognize that
the time for the work that you do off the back of it, there's therapies, not just the hour you sit with your therapist, it's the work that you have to do off the back of it. And like, people don't have time for it all the time.
I also recognize, and you know, I spent maybe a part of last year feeling almost like a bit disillusioned with all, because I'm like, oh, fuck's sake. Cognitive behavioural therapy and these therapies are like a capitalist enabler where it's people who don't feel good about their life.
Put a band-aid on it.
And you're like, here is a technique for you to feel better about your dysfunctional life, when actually our central nervous systems, and this isn't everybody, right? Because there are people out there that genuinely have distorted thinking and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, of course.
Your central nervous system sometimes is like right bang on. Like, if you don't get up the day, you aren't going to be able to feed your kids. Like, you know, look how quickly that people's houses get took off them during the last financial crisis.
Yeah.
Like, some of that's real, you know, like, and you can't sit with people and go, let's try and change that thought.
Yeah.
Like some sort of fucking magician.
Aye, because
like,
you've got a genuine concern.
Uh-huh. Like, there is relative and genuine concerns, anxieties and worries and sadness. And then there is actually,
sometimes you're experiencing anxiety because the world and your experience of it in that moment is genuinely horrible.
And we're talking about nowadays where it's like, we have mass mental illness, and you're like, we don't. We have mass poverty, and we have mass mental health problems caused by situational things in people's life that are real.
Right. I was going to say, situational depression, situational anxiety has always been prevalent in my life. Like, and it's not always from the people around you, it's not always the situation of a job. It can be from the wider pressure of a pandemic, for example. it's pretty anxiety inducing, but it's also a really good testing ground.
Aye.
Exactly what the hell you can do.
I mean, I'm sitting here talking earlier on about, you know, the public being stupid and hating people and blah, blah, blah. See, but I'm also completely conscious of the fact that that is like a coping mechanism for me. Like, I'm, and have discovered in recent years, like, very empathetic towards other people. Like, and it gets to a point where, like you say, I do feel it. Like, I do have, you know, generalised anxiety about how people are coping, about electricity bills, and, you know, generally part of my process is I try and get somebody to come in here and talk to us about it, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
But again, that's a luxury that a lot of people don't have, you know what I mean? Like, but I, for all the talk of, oh, you know, fuck people and all the rest of it, like, that's because if I actually let it in the way that I would do naturally, like, it would be completely overwhelming, you know what I mean?
It like, can be, man. Like, you sometimes have these moments of, like, I was going to say despair, but that's maybe quite dramatic. But like moments where I just feel quite, I just feel sad. Like the divisions that I feel like are quite obvious, like are working, like, and it feels like they're working quite well. And like that kind of divide, just for a place that has so much potential, like Scotland, Britain, like, the West, like we have so much like potential as a species, but we're doing absolutely nothing with it. It's just still a power grab, and I just don't really get it. Like, because the ones that are benefiting obviously have been doing this for forever. But
yeah. This is the thing when you talk to people about, like, you know, well, but look at the technological advances and look at the way that we've improved people's lives, and it comes back to exactly what you just said, Dylan.
Amazing. That's amazing. We've created algorithms that make people work harder.
What are we doing with it?
Yeah.
Like, if we don't, you know, oh well, we shouldn't really be, you know, there's this whole personal responsibility and stuff like that, and it's just like, guys, wait a minute, like we are a collective and we're interconnected, and this is why I feel like a lot of the time we don't feel very comfortable, is because we're made for connection and we're actively getting told to disconnect and just take care of ourselves.
Put your headphones on, stare at your envy screen, and
There is a truth to the
digitally and remotely rather than in person.
There is a truth to the fact that you cannot be of use to others unless you are in a stable place yourself. But what happens when you get to that stability? Because what I see for a lot of people is they bring the ladder up behind them because they feel like, well, if I start helping people get to where I am, you know, that's going to destabilize me here later. There's going to be less for me. We're in competition.
It's,
you know?
It's a false image that there's not enough for everybody when there's always plenty. Been more than enough there's for plenty. Anybody. Like, and the thing is, when you get so much, like, you get to a point where you don't know what the fuck to do with it. Like, and that's where you get these, like, obviously you get billionaire playgrounds, you get people buying football clubs. Like, literally, like, oh, right, okay, let's just buy a football club as my hobby. Like, it's fine, like, fine, like someone needs to live that life, right? That's fine. I don't think that everybody is aspiring to do that. Like, I think that most people just want, and I think that what actually brings most people actual contentment is whether it be a family, like whether it be a passion or a job or having a worth and a value. Like, have, like, what I've been struggling with and what I've been trying to do is finding like a purpose, like just find a purpose to be like. I don't have a family. Like last year I was fostering dogs. Like, that to me gave me a great
nihilism.
Purpose.
Embrace the void.
But that's
like
it.
Honestly.
Yeah. Just walk. Just follow. Just go follow the light.
Postmodern. Accept your own insignificance and move on.
Yeah. Going. Yeah. Like, obviously taking us a wee bit off topic, but yeah. No, I think that there's a lot of plays going on, a lot of things that are going on, and going back to sort of the original topic of like Gary Lineker, what he's done is he's just
he's shown solidarity,
but he's also like he's actually put a marker down. Uh-huh. He's like said no, like, and it's got attention, which is great, which is what needs to happen, because
we need to make sure that it gets the right type of attention, because I seen a thing for Corbyn yesterday and he was absolutely bang on, which he usually is anyway. That this started with the government trying to enact a fascist policy, right? We've already discussed that it literally written straight and lifted straight out of the Nazi playbook, right?
Yeah.
But the conversation has been about what Gary Lineker is and isn't allowed to say on Twitter.
Yeah.
And like, those two things are not the same. And like, as much as it's been really, for me, seeing that empathy that Lineker has shown for the people in these boats be reflected in the solidarity and empathy that his colleagues both in the game and in broadcasting showed them yesterday, or him doing the country. Like, I thought that was like really quite powerful that, you know, fucking 12 years of Tory government has got even the footballing fucking strike. You know what I mean? Like, that's where we are. But I think what got lost was that this policy is abhorrent and is a stain on the reputation of the UK as a country and as a black mark against every single one of them names if we let it happen. You know what I mean? Like, and that part of the conversation has been put away, and that's exactly what the Tories are absolute masters at, is that you've got one disaster, and that's why we go, they watch for one disaster to another. And you're like, no, they create one disaster to distract you from another, and then they fatigue you.
Yeah.
Because after 12 years of this, every couple of days, every week, you know what I mean? We didn't even time to process the bullshit about Matt Hancock and all the fucking text messages and how they're, you know, the government's basically been held to ransom by a journalist with an agenda before we're talking about Gary Lineker and Match of the Day and all the rest of it. It's a deliberate tactic. We think that they're incompetent, and they are incompetent, but the drip, 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 drip of this incompetence is deliberate, because when they need you to not be looking at this, they'll just go, oh, just fucking let it go. They've got client journalists. I mean, some of these text messages are like Johnson being like, aye, right, okay, look at the Koonsberg, look at the fucking whoever it was. You know, they've got their client journalists who will just go and regurgitate whatever line they want them to regurgitate, yeah, because that's how they get their access, is by being good little boys and girls and getting patted on the head. You know what I mean? Like, but I think when, you know, somebody like Lineker, I mean, they took Attenborough, David fucking Attenborough, off the TV schedule this weekend because something that he was doing for Countryfile was potentially going to piss off right wingers. And this is the big thing for me about this as well, is that all the talk of snowflakes and cancel culture and you can't say this and blah, 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 it all comes for the right. It's like they say, the biggest bedwetters out there are right wingers. They talk about, oh, we are the, you know, when men were men. Like, did you see this fucking GB News pish? Right, now, GB News, they're already an absolute fucking joking organisation. You know what I mean? Like, there's comic books out there with more factual information on them. And honestly, the divorce da energy and like fucking drunkle energy after them is fucking unreal, right? You know what I mean? But they did like an alternative Match of the Day today or yesterday. And I don't know if you've seen it, like go and look it up, right? And if you're listening to this, go and check it out. It is the most, I mean, like Steve Coogan couldn't have put this together better. It was fucking brutal. And, you know, they're going, we're going to the game at Brighton. And he's like, oh, aye, Gary Lineker will like Brighton, eh? Because they're all full of rainbow flags and woke. And the guy's pure, yes, the tofu-eating wokearati of Brighton. You're like, what the fuck kind of conversation are we having here? You know what I mean?
But also, like, on that, what's Brighton traditional for? Massive gay scene. Yeah. So it's like, undercover homophobia.
Yeah, that's exactly a dog whistle.
Doesn't really sound that undercover, if I'm honest.
No, it's
no, but it's done in this like tofu eating. You know, it's not coming out and just being straight homophobic. It's like it's became about the rainbow flag.
No, of course.
You know, like
it's codified.
They're trying to break down our culture. They're trying to, you know, they don't like us.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, no, and you're so spot on with that, Matt. It's like,
Last fucking one of them's a fucking
They want to say what they want until you start to say what you want back to them, and then it's like they shut it down.
How dare you be so offensive to me? And you're like, well, hold on a minute. You're the one that wants free speech. Like, see, what are we doing here?
You can't have it both ways. You can't have it both ways.
The thing with what you said, right, so you know how you're saying, you kind of said that the right are as bad. Like they are as bad. I don't think it comes from the right. Obviously, the cancel culture kind of came from the left, really. Like, in terms of people started getting cancelled as soon as they said anything that was...
What happened was that people get held responsible for their words and their actions.
And that's the market.
Well, yeah, of course.
But that's the market. So see, if the society decides, we don't like that, we're not going to buy your products, we're not going to watch your YouTube channel... That isn't cancel culture. That's how the market works. Just the same as if Costa Coffee came out and changed their coffee brand and their whole customer base go, we don't like that. cancel culture is another way of going, we don't like the fact that you're shutting us down. Like, I don't think there is one example that people have went, that's cancel culture, right? But tell you what happens, what does happen, and has happened in this city. A journalist at The Sun using her inside information to get Celtic supporters' addresses to go and send fucking evidence of bigotry to their workplace and get them sacked. That happened in this city.
Allegedly.
That is cancel culture. That's cancel culture to me, right? It happens to like normal people. But see this whole... I mean, who are the big examples that are cancel culture like?
Give me an example of cancel culture that was for the sake of it, that wasn't off the back of something that was legitimately people going, well, we don't like that anymore. Like, people don't get cancelled for no reason.
Well, I don't know. Like, I think there's times, I think, like, there was people who were cancelled off of Twitter during the pandemic for saying things that have turned out to be true, like, in terms of whether it be...
Like what?
Well, like the vaccine not really being a vaccine.
Is that a right versus left? Because we've got a right-wing government who are pro-vaccine. So I don't feel like that's a left versus right.
No, and I'm not saying that's necessarily a left versus right. I think what I mean is...
What do we mean the vaccine's not a vaccine?
Eh?
What do we mean the vaccine's not a vaccine?
Well, it's not really a vaccine. It's like... It doesn't stop the spread or contracting it.
No vaccine does.
It's the message, right? So the actual, I hear what you're saying, Dave. It's the way that they sold to people to go out in their masses and take this vaccination has turned out to be totally false, right? And I think that's like documented where it was like, they were like, you will stop the spread. If you go and get vaccinated, there was like messages right at the start. So I think that there was like messages that have turned out to be false as far as like what they said. And I think even like Pfizer's, you know, the documentation's like, oh, actually, we knew that it wouldn't stop the spread, but it was the only way that we could get people to go and take it was by giving them this message.
I've not seen any of that. But okay, if the two users are saying these have all, I've seen it
in commentary. I have not seen it myself. I've not went CEO, in and read, the, read CEO, the fucking...
I believe the court case has just finished for the CEO as far as like Pfizer, who's lost the court case, who has said he admitted basically that they did put out rhetoric to get people to take it wasn't exactly what
we're talking about. Like what you're talking about here is censorship, not cancel about, culture. Yeah, you know,
of
what
course,
I mean?
But it's all, no. But what I'm talking about is cancel. Like I'm talking about people who are canceling it from essentially from the inside. So whether that is censorship, but it's canceling in terms of to follow an agenda, like which.
Well, the left campaigns, definitely. I get what you mean in that sense. Like, the left have definitely campaigned in the sense for, you know, changes. And whether I look at the one recently, but we're going to touch on the bigger the Hogwarts Legacy game, right? Mm. Now, the quote unquote left were like, if you play this game, you are a transphobe. And I don't really get behind that myself. You know what I mean? Like, there was a fake quote during the rounds about how, you know, Rowling said that if you buy any of my products, you endorse my views. Now, that was complete straight up disinformation that nobody ever said. But at the same time, the left on places like Twitter and that were using it extensively to justify this, you know, boycott that they were trying to organise. Now, see, at the end of the day, I've never really been into Harry Potter. I've watched the movies. I liked some of the later ones as they were a wee bit more grown up.
Yeah.
But the first like four or five are kids' movies. Yeah. And I just really didn't dig. The game looks all right. I think, you know, as a gamer, like, it looks as if it could be fun. Like, and she's not involved in it. She's probably going to make some money off the IP and stuff like that. But see, beyond that, I don't think playing a computer game makes you a fucking transphobe. You know what I mean? Like what you hold in your heart and what you, the opinions and the actions that you put out in the world are what define, you know, who you are and who you're not. The upside to that was that this game went off the shelves like fucking nobody's business. The actual campaigning to get it withdrawn and to get it sort of, you know,
pushed it,
dismissed, actually pushed it into the stratosphere. You know what I mean? Like, so when people go, oh, the left are trying to cancel me, you're like, a lot of the time they're saying that because they're grifters. Like, see all these guys on GB News, all these guys on fucking right-wing podcasts, all the ones in America and the UK that are, you know, becoming presenters and whatever else. Like, they're all grifters. Like, they're, oh, I'm being cancelled. Cool. Now, come and subscribe to my podcast for £3 a month and I'll tell you how I'm being cancelled. Or, like, you know, subscribe to the newspaper that I work for and read my column every week about how I've been cancelled. Like, this is about driving sales. Same as, like, the reaction to Lineker was about driving clicks. People, and some, this wasn't me, it was something I retweeted that seen somebody saying was like, the people who started this thing about Gary Lineker do not give a fuck about what Gary Lineker had to say. What they care about is that X amount, tens or hundreds of thousands of people will click on the link that they make money from
as part of their
publication. And that's what this was about. The Daily Mail don't give a fuck about migrant boats. They give a fuck about people clicking on links about migrant boats.
And this is what's happened to Russell Brand, is that for me, Russell Brand was a traumatised individual who managed to come out the other side of his addiction and had a genuine... And I know that there are people out there that disagree with me, they'll disagree with us. He had a genuine want to go out and help others. And when he did like the Trues, and he was doing like stuff like going to Parliament, very egotistical, borderline narcissistic type of guy.
Yep.
But he did have his heart in the right place.
I think there was a time where he did as well.
But see now, he is driven by clicks.
Yep.
He's now, it's all about his YouTube channel.
And that's where he makes his money.
And now he's grifting.
He's not on YouTube anymore. I think he's gone to Rumble.
Well, whatever he is, he's trying to drive content.
He got demonetized on one of his platforms, I think. So he's now one of the ones that's on Rumble.
Ah, he was getting pictured with fucking Trump Jr. and stuff like that the other day.
But that's
not a reason to take him off of YouTube and stuff like that. But I think that...
But I mean, it does mean that genuine thing that you had previously
is no longer the case.
You get lost in the sauces. Because these guys are not genuine.
We're not talking about, you know, like, should these people be monetized and demonetized and blah, blah, blah. It's more about, like, what we're thinking about him.
Aye.
And he has absolutely just grifted. See, and I mean this, right? See, anybody out there that claims to know the truth, they are so full of shit because nobody knows the truth. Like, there are so many different, like, any truther that's like, I know, it's like, you know, fuck all, mate.
Yep.
Like, you're regurgitating and respouting opinions that have existed, that exist on the internet.
Aye.
And that's it. Like, unless you have, you know, you're some sort of
been in the room at the
exactly
time, you don't know
enough. You just know a version of the truth, and it's all that, and it's all this truther stuff now, and it's pure and it really, especially with somebody like Russell Brand, I feel like it's became a way for him to deal with his own anxiety. Is that he's like, okay, I need, and this is the whole thing.
I think it feels like a cult. I think he's got his own wee following of
cult of personality.
And I reckon, but it's also like,
he is definitely a cult leader all around, by the way.
He's now teetotal, and he's not like this, like, womanizing, like, guy anymore, apparently. But his followers are going to be at, like, probably, what, 80% or 70%, probably, like, these sort of middle aged women.
I couldn't say. There was a period of time where I did watch some of his YouTube content. He had the wee sort of 8 to 10 minute snippets where
I like the stand up.
Again, I like some of his stand up. But I think his delivery was always a bit OTT for me. Like, he's very animated, very sort of lively, and, you know, quite, I don't know how I would describe it, but I found his style a lot more off putting than his content, if you get me. You know, I found him hard to watch, but I was quite happy to listen to him some of the times, if you get me.
I like him as well.
I don't really get where he's gone at the minute, where you're just like, what benefit to you is there to be standing next to these scumbags? You know what I mean?
Money.
Exactly. That's the only answer. And I'd like to be able to find another answer, because I do kind of like the guy, but sometimes on the path he's on the new, he's no good to me.
Sometimes it's sort of like you stand next to these people to challenge the authority as well. It's like, whatever.
That is it.
There is a challenge of authority where it's like, you're like, as much as we're saying whitewash all these people because they're also on the other side of the story, it's like, well, no, but they're still people, aren't they? So let's stand next to them and like, I don't know about this Trump's, who was it, his son?
Trump Jr.
Yeah, I don't know, like, obviously in terms of what he's been doing. I know he did a recent trip to the States. I think he was actually on Joe Rogan.
He was on Rogan,
And yeah, this whole like connection to the right, I guess, like, and Rumble's meant to be like a right wing platform, apparently. Yeah. But I would say that Russell Brand firmly sits like in this heavy part of the left. So what I was kind of coming to earlier as well was the fact that I've very much stopped seeing that much of a difference between the left and the right.
Yeah.
You see, over the past 5-10 years, like, it all merges into the same mess. Like when you get so far around,
they're all so in like, the center, pretty much.
They're not even in the center. They're so far away from the center that they're round at the other side. Yeah. Like, I don't see it as a linear thing with politics. It's very much a loop. Like you go from the center and you end up in the same place, whether you go left or right, mm-hmm. and that is catastrophe generally. Like people dying, people starving, and people suffering.
Yeah.
Like either way, like, and that's just
that was a conversation I had with somebody years ago. 2016, when you know Brexit and Trump happened, and she said to me, like, I'm loving this, and I was like, and she's just like, because I hate the establishment, yeah. and that's where Russell Brand is. He's anti-establishment.
That's where
but
Trump
he's
is.
Standing next to Trump.
That's where Trump is.
But
though.
Trump is a representative of the establishment.
But he was a vote against the establishment,
and the brainwashed fucking people's minds because yeah. they were told that. But actually, he's backed by billionaires. Fucking Rupert Murdoch is one of his biggest backers.
He was
so
guest at the Clinton's wedding.
But
like,
he
knows I mean,
fuck all about politics.
Yeah,
like, but he wasn't from the political
the
sphere,
political establishment,
which is what was different about yeah. it, which was what was interesting about it.
That,
like,
that's
it don't know.
That, so what I said to her was, is that, you know, do I like the political establishment? No, I'm not a fan, right? I think at the time it was David Cameron was in, and I'm just like, you know, but am I willing to watch millions of people die while I sit and laugh because we voted for Boris and Trump? Absolutely not. Like, there's got to be a better way to do this.
Of course.
There has got to be a way where we don't need to stand side by side with fucking scumbags like Donald Trump Jr., who is a fucking idiot, who has just, you know, made billions off of the back of, like, these guys are literally taking the cream. They're taking the money that should be doing the things that we were talking about earlier, like taking care of people, healthcare, like all of this stuff. These fuckers are pocketing it. And now Russell Brand, guys like Russell Brand, who have came for this, like, really, I think, a genuine place,
mm-hmm.
are now standing side by side because it's seen as anti-establishment. But can you see the wood for the trees? That's like, they are exactly what you were saying. Two cheeks of the same arse. It's the same arse.
I think
that's just
a very generous way to look at it. I think it's
Starmer,
just, I think they're all just grifters.
Everybody's just
these guys that are like
it's power and control, really.
Whatever else new, it's just all about how do I use this left versus right culture war to enrich myself? And that's kind of where we are, I think. You know what I mean? Like, whether it be, you know, GB News or fucking, you know, Russell Brand or whatever it is, it's well, maybe why you don't see a difference between left and right, because they're all speaking the same cultural language now.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean?
It is that, but it's also like these people are, whether you brand yourself on the left or the right, they're all, it's all the same motivation really, isn't it? Like whether it's getting clicks or whether it feels like it's all coming from like essentially the same place. It feels like we're at a very interesting like time globally, but even just like Britain, like Scotland, like when you start narrowing it down and further, it just all feels quite unsure in terms of direction, you know.
Like, oh, aye.
Yeah, this city's in disarray.
Aye.
Like, this city is in absolute disarray. The city centre is a fucking bonfire.
Yeah.
The place is disgusting. It's bogging. When you walk through it on a Saturday night, it's nowhere. I mean, you're not even looking at half. What it used to be.
We go down Sucky Hall Street after coming out of here, go and grab buses and whatever else. And how many times have we walked down Sucky Hall Street where you're like,
it's dead.
It's not even just disgusting. It's dead. Like, you know, Sucky Hall Street, it used to be almost like the fucking strip at your, you know, Spanish holiday where you could go there any time of the day and night, any day of the week, and it would be lively. Yeah. Like the place would be jumping. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, whereas now you walk down it and you're like, it's like a ghost town.
I don't know why that is. I don't know if it's a change shift of culture. Is it cost?
Like, I don't know.
Can people not afford to go out anymore?
I don't know.
Like, I don't really go out anymore. So at any point,
I think it's everything. Think it's, you know, people get 18 months where they didn't come into town. Town's got nothing for people other than to get a coffee and something to eat, really.
I tell you one thing, though, they're not fucking all ice bathing and fucking eating kombucha shakes, like that's not happening. Like,
no,
I actually know a guy who does drink kombucha shakes in the office, and he gets fucking dogs abuse for it. So that's because the stuff
is
stinking.
And so he should.
Stuff is stinking.
Well, we wrap up. I think what have we done?
Done an hour and five.
Okay,
yeah, I'm good.
That was a good wee powwow conversation.
I think so. Like, definitely enjoying getting back into the swing of it. But I'm good to go.
If you've stayed with us this far, congratulations.
Oh, aye, thank you.
Like, subscribe, share it in your group chat with your mod, whatever you do with your podcast, give us a shout. Like,
no, and there's been people who have actually engaged with us, particularly in the YouTube comments in recent weeks, which has been great. Thanks very much for that. That's something that really helps us and we do appreciate, and we'll obviously continue to respond to everything that we can as and when that happens.
Aye.
And if there's anything you want us to
talk
bring
about
up or discuss.
Aye.
Or
because I'm fed up already talking about Tories all the time.
I know, mate. I know.